We've heard a lot about terrorism in Africa over the past couple of decades, but what's happening in West Africa? Hi, this is Phil Gursky, President and CEO of Borealis Threat and Risk Consulting in Russell, Ontario, Canada. Listen to Canadian Intelligence, eh? If you're reading the news at all of late, you know that when it comes to terrorism globally, and more specifically Islamist terrorism or jihadism, Africa is worrying an awful lot of people around the globe. It is by far the most lethal area of our planet when it comes to terrorist attacks. I've seen statistics that over 10,000 people have been killed in the Sahel region of Africa alone this year in 2023. We have jihadi conflicts in Somalia been going on since the mid-2000s. We have an Islamic State affiliate in Mozambique that's still active, an Islamic State affiliate called the ADF in the DRC. Democratic Republic of Congo has been active for the past couple of years. We have jihadis in Uganda. We have Boko Haram and Islamic State West African province in Nigeria that have been killing people for the better part of a couple of decades. But one area of the world that's come up of late is West Africa, not one that one normally associates with this type of terrorism. But there are increasingly voices saying that we need to worry about that part of the planet. So in order to get a better insight as to what's happening in West Africa, I'm very happy to invite to the podcast Guillaume Sotomayor. He's a researcher and analyst who covers security and political issues in Africa. He's a graduate of Oxford University, United Kingdom. And he's joining me on the phone from Dakar, which of course is the capital of Senegal. So Guillaume, welcome to the podcast. Let's start with some basic information, Guillaume. A lot of people don't really, I think, understand what we mean by West Africa. We obviously, it's a huge continent, but from your perspective, how would you define West Africa as a part of that part of the world?
Thank you very much, Phil. It's good always to put a geographic context when we actually come back to analyzing a specific situation. We can consider West Africa, it's always difficult to put exact geographic delimitation, even more in countries that have been, you know, defined in terms of their borders, very often with the influence of former colonial powers. In that case, mainly France and the United Kingdom, also Portugal and Spain, and Germany. So West Africa, you know, it can be defined as follows. It is the countries that are on the south of the Sahel, of the Sahara. And so the Sahara is this long band of desert that goes from Mauritania and Morocco in the north, inner northwest, to Sudan in the east. And yes, and actually right now in the south of that area, you have different geographic zone, right? You have on the west Senegal and Guinea and Guinea-Bissau, and in the south what is called the Gulf of Guinea countries that are delimited on the east by Nigeria, which is a, you know, powerhouse, which is a extremely densely populated and very important economic power in the region. And you have in this area in the Gulf of Guinea, you have an important country, for instance, that is Cote d'Ivoire or Ghana, who are also important economic powers, an important military power of the region.
Okay, so that's a good start, Guillaume. Thank you. What I've been reading of lately in African news sources are that countries like Togo, Benin, Cote d'Ivoire, Senegal are increasingly worried that some of the terrorism movements, the conflicts we're seeing, especially in Nigeria, as I mentioned with Boko Haram and Islamic State West African province, you refer to the Sahel. And as I noted, the Sahel is an incredibly dangerous zone now. So we're talking Central African Republic, Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, et cetera, et cetera. From your perspective, with the research that you've done, when did this threat of jihadi violence first begin to manifest itself in parts of West Africa that historically had never seen this type of terrorism?
Thank you. Yeah. So again, what we just said just before, and it was your introductory question was important, that the Sahel is an integral part of West Africa. and the middle of that part of that area is Burkina Faso, right? But north of that area is North Africa, with the Maghreb notably, and Libya and the Mashrek. So there's been a translation of that violence going south in the early 2000s with a group called the GSPC, and who is the ancestor of Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb.
Okay.
And so early 2000 already, in 2001, 2002, the GSPC had a branch that was already implemented at the extreme north of Mali, at the extreme north of Mauritania, so in the Sahel region. So we can already trace back, you know, the presence of jihadi groups in the Sahel, and so in West Africa, from that period of time. They started expanding first in the Sahel, especially in Mali, but also in Niger, in Mauritania. They had presence of ramifications already starting to expand in the region. But then they started to, Al-Qaeda started to expand in the sense that it also had a strategy in place since the early 2000 to grow in the region, to anchor socially within different population, and to gain not only, you know, the heart, but also to change the mindset of many populations. So there is not only a work in terms of military conquest, but from the early stages, it was a strategy from Al-Qaeda to develop its presence. And in the long run, in the long term, Al-Qaeda is always, you know, as you know very well from different regions of the world, playing this long game, right?
Right.
So to actually, you know, do some dawah, so do some politicism to change the mindset of people, the manhaj, so their ideological mindset. They also have been very much realistic in that sense. So this called the Fiqh al-Bayt. It means that they have a jurisprudence of reality, which means that they also manage to ally, to create alliances through weddings, through a number of mutually interested opportunistic alliances with a number of armed groups or key tribes in the Sahel. So they managed to create a solid implementation in the Sahel by 2010, approximately. They created several subsidiaries in the region under different appellations and different names. And based on that, they started to expand already in the early 2010s in West Africa, in the rest of West Africa, which means through towards the coastal states. And already back in 2012, 2013, there were the premises of the presence of Al-Qaeda in the north of Côte d'Ivoire. We must just say also that Nigeria, in that regard, from everything that I just said, is a particularity, right? It's a singularity. Because Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State, but before that, Boko Haram, which is a separate jihadi insurgency, it had very strong connection to both Al-Qaeda and then to Islamic State, but is now really an endogenous, very specific jihadi group implemented in the Lake Basin Chad region, so between Chad, Cameroon, Niger, and Nigeria, and the Islamic State in West Africa province in the north of Nigeria, active in a very wide area, extremely brutal, a group that is extremely well implemented. He's been active in the in the country for over 20 years as well, and it's been capitalizing as well on a long movement and a long evolution of local societies. So, yes, I think that we can say in conclusion, to sum up, that they've been present in the region for now approximately 20 years, and especially now towards the coastal state of the Gulf of Guinea for over 10 years, but in Nigeria, especially present since over 20 years as well.
That's interesting, Guillaume. I didn't realize they had a presence in Côte d'Ivoire for the better part of a decade, because I've just been picking up in terms of open source news. Now, obviously, you're on the ground in Senegal, and just for full disclosure, I did work a little bit with a Senegalese earlier on this year to talk about radicalization, but it seemed to me that the jihadi threat to the Gulf of Guinea states wasn't as prevalent as it is in Niger and other places. And obviously, you're telling me it has been. From your perspective and the studies you've done, and the analysis you've done, how serious is this threat to those nations on the Gulf of Guinea?
So, I just want to mention here first that it is when the present started, right? And so in 2012-2013 in north of Cote d'Ivoire, in 2015-16 in north of Benin already. And so again, because as we mentioned, it's a long-term development,
right?
It's they create strong connections with local people. They become, you know, they offer an alternative system of justice, of security, of protection, of interdependence with respect to economic activities, for instance, that they will protect and support. So again, it is not only a military occupation, it is not only sheer and brutal violence, it is again a transverse action that they are conducting. So in that regard, the fact that they are being able now to conduct violent action in the north of Cote d'Ivoire, Ghana, Benin, Togo at such rapid pace of expansion is due to the fact they have started, their implementation a couple of years back. So yeah, this threat is very real. It's very real, and then it is, I would say, unequal depending on where you are in the region and from country to country. It depends, of course, on the quality of the response of the national counterinsurgency response, of the fact that the response will be also transverse, you know, or not. Will it be only military, will it also include a number of other dimension, justice, education, a positive presence of the state, you know, towards, for instance, people in the north of the country, notably towards Muslim population of certain communities that are often targeted for recruitment by jihadi groups and sometimes ostracized by government and capitals that are mostly located in the south part of these countries. So there are a number of questions here. So depending on those national counterinsurgency response, but also of the tactical interests of each of the jihadi groups that they will have to attack XYZ country. For instance, you know, it is very likely that if they have a strong economic interest, a lot of financial revenues originating from a region, for instance, from North Cote d'Ivoire and North Ghana, they will very likely conduct less military operation in those areas. It doesn't mean that they are not present. It doesn't mean that they won't conduct military operation there in the future. It just means that for now, they are not military priorities, because if they would conduct military operation there, the counterinsurgency response would increase and their revenues would then decrease. Again, they are very tactical in the way they conduct, you know, a step-by-step progression from, you know, countries to countries, and then from region to region within those countries. What is certain, just to conclude, is that if you look at a map, and I incite the people that will listen to this podcast to do so, they must look at Burkina Faso, right, and then the south of Mali. They must understand that jihadi groups function and expansion in their expansion like a web, you know, like a spider web. And actually, there is a region right now, for instance, at the tri-border between Mali, Burkina Faso, and Cote d'Ivoire that is almost fully under the control of jihadists, of two branches of Al-Qaeda, and Katiba Serma and Katiba Massina, and Ansarul Islam. And same in the tri-border area between Togo, Benin, and Burkina Faso. So the fact that they have such an anchorage in Burkina Faso is a central area of expansion towards the coastal states of the Gulf of Guinea is particularly worrying. Similar to Senegal, Sierra Leone, to Guinea, that will very likely at some point be targeted and are already targeted for infiltration by jihadist organizations. So yes, it is a particularly worrying situation, and the states are right to be on their toes to actually fight this expansion and address these threats right now.
Wow, the information you're providing me and my listeners, I think, is unique. I don't think most people could find West Africa on a map. So your advice to look at a map is good. You also talked a little bit about the government's response to this. Now, I'm reading more of late that these countries are reaching out to other neighboring states, maybe parts of the West, United States, European Union, etc., for assistance on how to handle this threat. Do you think that the efforts that are being made by the governments, and as you say, most of the capital cities are in the south, whereas the jihadis seem to be largely present in the north, do you think the efforts that these governments are making in this regard are going to be effective?
I think in some countries they are. I think that Cote d'Ivoire, for instance, or in some ways, Senegal or Togo are, you know, are leaning towards, I think, the right direction. I think that the Western states also aren't particularly good, you know, they don't have an amazing track record, let's say, internationally, fighting the Islamic State or Al-Qaeda in the long run. So I think that what is tremendously important is that endogenous responses are being supported, which means like not imposing a Western models, a Western approach, but like truly like backing in the proper sense of the term and respectfully backing the local states in their responses. It doesn't mean approving everything or condoning everything. It just means, again, being in a more laid-back approach, right? And I think, for instance, you mentioned the United States or European states, but also like England, in our regard, is the United Kingdom is doing some, or Canada, or other are doing some very interesting work in this region in our regard. I think that the key, as we mentioned, it is extremely tough to fight the expansion of such a high level tactical and strategic group, right? That has now over 40 years of experience of implementing in a territory and expanding over different type of territories throughout the earth. It is extremely tough. And I think, again, Cote d'Ivoire is an interesting example because they are both, they're simultaneously, you know, reinforcing the military presence, the intelligence network, relying a lot on human intelligence, which I think is the right response rather than technological only. And they're working as well on intercommunal relations and solving disputes, you know, as soon as possible rather than letting it, you know, kind of, how do you say this in English?
Fester. Sorry, I'm losing my word. Fester, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Also being present in terms of public infrastructures, in terms of public services. So showing, again, the positive presence of the state towards disgruntled populations that also have been sometime that have felt abandoned or that have felt, you know, rejected by the state or that have suffered a bad presence from the state. When I mean bad presence, I mean sometimes the embezzlement of public resources,
right,
extortions,
of course,
corruption, etc. So now, in a lot of Al-Qaeda or the Islamic State propaganda is exploiting that in a very efficient way. So I think that right now, Cote d'Ivoire, in that sense, is doing a very interesting job because it is providing a transverse response. I think that what we're seeing, for instance, sometimes in Ghana or in Benin, in some ways, targeting one community, especially the Fulbe community, shutting down transhumance pathways between Burkina Faso and these countries, for instance, or affecting, you know, because the Fulbe community, for our listeners, is mostly a nomadic or semi-nomadic community that is involved in business a lot, but also into quite a lot into cattling, into cattle. So
right.
I think that affecting those businesses, especially like targeting this population, is not going to have any positive effect. We've seen that in the Sahel already. It hasn't worked. On the contrary, it has bolstered, it has boosted the jihadi propaganda and expanded their networks way beyond this community, actually, too, because they are an inter-community group, multi-community. Al-Qaeda is multi-community, as is the Islamic State. So we must be extremely careful in that regard. And I'm not extremely positive when I look at the response of some states in the region. On the other hand, I think that, again, the responses are going to come from those states primarily, and we must respect that. When I say we, I mean the international community and Occidental states, it is very important that we do not try to impose our models, our responses, our views on the issue.
I think that's a really important point, to not use our experiences and our successes and failures. And let's face it, counterterrorism is difficult. Dealing with communities, trying to figure out whether your actions will have unintended consequences, etc. Last question for you, Guillaume. You've really spoke very eloquently about how Al-Qaeda is kind of playing the long game. They've been there for a while. They're establishing their presence in these countries. Now, I know you can't predict the future any more than I can, but is one of your fears that at some point this is going to go beyond a very gradual development of jihadi groups in this part of Gulf of Guinea? Do we risk the possibility of a fairly large-scale attack at some point? Let's face it. I mean, all the other countries in the region have had, in the case of the Sahel, many large-scale attacks where dozens of people have been killed. Is it a matter of time, you think, before these countries in the Gulf of Guinea face something similar?
It is a very difficult question to respond. I fear so, to be honest. I think that very often these groups function on symbolic victories, but they also learned a lot from the counterproductive effect in terms of communication and public image,
right,
of conducting indiscriminate attacks against civilians, and in particular, Muslim civilians. So they also, I think, are refraining from now, for now, they're refraining from conducting these large-scale attacks in the coastal states. But they conducted one, again, to remind our viewers, next to Abidjan in Cote d'Ivoire, in Grand Bassam in 2016 already. But since then, they haven't. And I think that right now, from what we are seeing, their main tactics is harassment. You know, is harassing sometimes large-scale or small-scale attacks, local army forces or state representatives. It is targeting, you know, local, chiefs and representatives of the states for kidnapping and then for ransoms. So it is more into like pushing away the states from what they consider being Dar al-Islam, which is a land of Islam, right?
Right,
so,
right.
And then, again, gaining a territory. So, everyone that they deem being an opposing forces to their plan, so also sometimes local chiefs, local community leaders, etc. So yes, I think this is mainly where we are heading, and I don't think that in the short term a large scale attack is what we're going to see from Al Qaeda. I want to say that this might not be the case for the Islamic State.
Yes, much more brutal.
And I think that also the Islamic State is distinguishing itself also in its propaganda. We must really remind our listeners that everywhere in the world there is an ideological shift and fight between the two, you know, between Al-Qaeda,
yes,
and the Islamic State, because again, there is a different vision of Tawhid, which is called the unicity of Islam. Let's not go into the technical terms, but what basically the fight is about is what the Islamic State is considering that Al-Qaeda is hypocritical, is making compromises in its jihad by doing local alliances, by talking and interacting with local leaders or with local communities, whereas the Islamic State is saying that there should not be any compromise,
right,
any,
yep,
vision of things, and it should be an absolutistic jihad in every sense of the term. It's not always doing that, actually, practically in the ground, but that's the propaganda. So that's, I think, the risk is more the Islamic State, right? That to appeal to a certain type of militants, to a certain type of new recruits by conducting highly symbolic large-scale attacks. But for now, the Islamic State is a little bit less present than Al-Qaeda on the borders of West African coastal countries. So in the short term, I don't think it's an immediate risk that we can foresee.
Okay. And thank you for raising that point about the Islamic State question mark. We, as you stated, Islamic State is a very different group than Al-Qaeda. I remember when Islamic State was first created in the mid-2010s, Even Al-Qaeda was embarrassed by Islamic State, saying that you're giving jihadis a bad name, as if that's even possible. Guillaume, this has been a fascinating conversation about a part of the world that I'm pretty sure most people know very little about. It is worth watching. You've given myself and my listeners a really good insight as to what the stakes are, what the challenges are going forward. And I think we're going to hear more about this area. So I want to thank you very much for taking the time for joining me on the podcast from Dakar.
Thank you very much, Phil. And if I may, I just want to raise the fact that I am here also as a part of the Middle East Institute, where I'm a non-resident scholar, and as CRTG, the Children Research and Terrorist Group Working Group Fellow for Africa. And so I want to thank also both of the organization for their support in the research that I'm conducting. So thank you very much, Phil, for having me.
Well, and thank you for the work you're doing. It's really important, and I hope you continue it. So that was my conversation with Guillaume Sotomayor in West Africa. What did you think about what he had to say about the jihadi threat in that part of the world? Love to hear your thoughts. You can reach me on email, borealisfrisk@gmail.com, or on X at borealissaves. You can also locate me on LinkedIn and on Facebook. If you like this content, want to get more of it, go to the website, borealisthreatandrisk.com, hit the subscribe button. It's free of charge. All the podcasts and blogs. Love to hear your thoughts, your feedback, perhaps ideas for other topics. We'll talk again soon. Until then, take care.